This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Politics.
Hey, Ta, welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week. Hashtag Politics with Fresh and Botsang. It's been a massive, massive week. President Ramaphosa in court trying to stop his own impeachment. Dudula and March running the borders, perhaps, because nobody else seems to wanna. The DA write one letter, and the entire cabinet shakes. Trump signs a peace deal with Iran and possibly leaves Israel out in the cold. And 50 years after June 16, the kids of 76 fought for the classroom. The kids of 2026 seemingly have similar issues. Botsang is in the building because I cannot handle this hot potato alone. Please welcome Botsang Modimwame Moilwa. B.
Good morning, Fresh.
What's up?
Geshapo bra, except that I had a misfortune during the week.
Askis.
But I'm good.
Happy Father's Day for tomorrow.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
I'm dressed like this because I was at a Father's Day soccer match for the fathers at my kid's school.
Okay.
I am tired. So if I am not firing on old pistons, it's because I've been playing soccer.
At least you're fit. You go to the gym. You could run and play soccer. Some of us wouldn't be able to
go. My man, gym fitness is not soccer fitness. Just like swimming fitness is not cycling fitness, is not running fitness. All of them require different levels of fitness. But shout out to all the fathers. If you're a father, hopefully you are made to feel like the hero that you are. If you're a dad that is struggling to see your kids, you must fight to see your kids. If for whatever reason you've given up on seeing your kids, or will now decide you're going to be deadbeat, these are your kids. Before you know it, they're all grown up and you've had nothing to do with their lives. Try make a bit of an effort. That's all.
Maybe I should be lazy this week. You know, I only remembered now that you mentioned that it's Father's Day.
Yes.
And last week I was with Onkarabile, and she only left on Tuesday because Monday was a school holiday.
Yes.
And I was cooking every day for her. Every day. She demands that I cook. She doesn't want takeaways.
Yes.
And cooked. I even gave a little chemer.
That was dope.
Yeah.
So, no, welcome to my life. I'm literally, I cook dinner every night.
Yeah.
Except Fridays. Fridays are takeaways.
Nah. Anyway.
Yes, sir.
What's going on in the country, Fresh?
Ramaphosa interdicts the impeachment committee as Parley's legal team briefs them first. What's going on this week, sir?
You know, when we finished last week and prior to that, on Friday, President Ramaphosa filed an urgent application to the Western Cape High Court to interdict the process of impeachment, the parliamentary process of impeachment.
Yes.
We did talk about it, Fresh.
No, previously. But is he... I get it out of while I am challenging the outcome.
The Section 89 outcome.
So the committee.
Yes.
You can't carry on because you are going to ruin my good name.
Yes. They're actually relying on what informs the impeachment committee is that Section 89 report.
Yes.
We did talk about it about 2-3 weeks back.
And the president says it's based on hearsay, amongst other things.
I don't know why would the president... You know, Fresh, when I looked at the papers, by the way, I don't know why would... the president's legal advisors or himself downplayed the work that was done by the Section 89 panel.
Or the seriousness of the whole thing, Jay.
And this is also where I think politicians don't look at the seriousness of the thing. I've heard Gwede Mantashe commenting on it. It is money, it's not state money. You know, people saying such things. They don't realize the seriousness. It's not about the money. It's not about the president's personal finance money being stolen.
And nobody's saying he stole money.
Yes. It's breaking the rules and the laws of this country in handling forex. That's number one.
Mm.
Also, in handling the way this whole issue of theft and robbery, whatever it's called.
And not reporting a crime.
Despite even that.
And then clandestinely investigating.
Exactly. And instead using state resources and wrong resources as well, like his personal bodyguard or security to can investigate and arrest these people and all that. And I think they are downplaying the whole thing. But, you know, for a free legal advice to them, I think it's time-wasting tactic. I think for me, this is only because there is no way.
No, but he says you guys are going to tarnish his good name if you carry on before he is done challenging
outcomes. He should allow the two processes to take place as they deem fit. This committee has a lot of work to do. They must still do the terms and conditions of how they are going to operate, because it's the first time we're having such a situation in the country. Allow them to do their work. The outcomes, this is not actually investigating or process of impeaching him. It's to look at, was there wrongdoing that he can be impeached? Allow the process to take place. But also, I still say I want to see a situation where a lower court, a high court, not even a Supreme Court of Appeal, a high court is going, a provincial high court is going to overturn the decision of the Constitutional Court.
In fact, Advocate William Mukari SC has already advised the committee to oppose. His line is that the Western Cape High Court has no jurisdiction to effectively suspend a Concord order, and that an interdict would do a grave trespass on Parliament's terrain. Committee resolved on Thursday to fight it. Meeting is set for the 24th of June.
Okay. Yes. I agree with Advocate Mukari.
Yes.
That they should not, they will be doing injustice to us as a nation not to do its job. And also, I don't think it had to even go to an extent of being given advice, legal advice by Advocate Mukari. Yes, he's the advocate that is leading and advising the parliamentary, what do you call it, legal committee.
Yes.
However, Fresh, there's an order. There is a constitutional court order, which is the highest court order of the land. Who will challenge that out of what that committee has to do? And me and you have said 2 weeks ago, what should have happened actually when these documents were received? It is upon the responsibility of the Speaker of Parliament to actually, not even that committee, the Speaker, that's the committee of Parliament. The Speaker is supposed to be respondent number one to this interdict by the President, supposed to be the Speaker representing the National Assembly, to say we are not going to stop our duty as prescribed by the Constitution and as directed by the Constitutional Court. You know what I'm saying? So I think Advocate Mukari, the senior counsel, is on the right track. And I think, and what I like about the decision they've taken during the course of this week, on Thursday specifically, was the fact that they didn't even take the date very far, like next month, the 24th of June. It's now. So thumbs up to Parliament for standing its ground. The President has representative in that committee. They are not supposed to be his representative, but they are members of his political party. The ANC has a very clear practice of defending their leaders or their position in Parliament. And they are in majority in that parliamentary committee, and I'm expecting them to conduct themselves in that particular fashion. Not to say it's right to do that, but I'm expecting them to go and stand up and use their majority to hold on to the GNU as well. They may lobby. They may lobby other members of the GNU, the Democratic Alliance, the Patriotic Alliance, to coincide with them and outvote or outnumber all other parties. If you look at the number of members of the GNU and non-members, they will outnumber them in that committee.
So are we suggesting that if the EFF and the ATM had not stood up to say we are opposing the President's course of action, that the Speaker of Parliament, on behalf of Parliament, that put together this committee in the first place, would not oppose?
Well, she was silent. She was silent until these two political parties stood up very firmly and made noise day one about this whole thing. Even when President Ramaphosa, before he filed an urgent application last week, even before that, at the end of last week, when he started talking about, I'm consulting, I'm seeking legal opinion advice, ATM and EFF already stood up and said, no, we are not going to be derailed or delayed by your actions. It is well within the rights of President Ramaphosa to go to court, to go and seek legal assistance or a different opinion. It's well within his right, like anybody else in the country. But fair and square, let Parliament do its job.
If you were best friends with President Ramaphosa, how would you advise he deal with this whole thing, given that obviously right now the inevitable is being delayed? And once this thing the process, we press play on the process, there'll be way more things we are bound to find out about Parapara.
Yeah.
Than if, for instance, it was a case of King, like the initial time where we were told he's going to resign.
Yes,
and
yes.
And his close friends had told him that you're not going to do that.
Yeah.
Because surely there's going to be way more damning testimonies and evidence put forward if this thing proceeds.
Yeah.
How would you advise him? You guys are best friends.
First, you are talking about there'll be more than evidence. It has already started coming out. There's been leaks of court papers that insinuates or suggests that actually looking at what was recovered from the suspects and other stuff, there could have been more than $580,000 that was taken from the farm and all those things. There's many other things of how did the farm, the money arrive there. Mustafa's case is still open-ended. It's not clear how he got into the country with the money. And if I was President Ramaphosa's friend or advisor, if you know, if he knows, and there's an element of truth in this whole thing, and he knows the truth, he's the only person who knows the truth, or the first person, I would have left the office fresh. I would have left the office. I would have stood up and say, I'm sorry, I've done wrong. I handled this thing in an improper manner. Or even if he doesn't leave the office, I've let them say, we are not accepting your apology or your sorriness, leave the office. Even if he doesn't leave the office, he should have simply admitted to the wrongdoing, to not following process, not go all over, use Chapter 9 institutions, fighting courts, try to block this thing. And now it's giving investigators and interested parties and opposition parties an interest of what is it that is being hidden here. Understand? You make people to dig more because you are busy defending yourself. I always use the old school saying, he who defends himself accuses himself. When it's not necessary. Once you start defending yourself, you're accusing yourself when it's not necessary. And I think President Ramaphosa should have simply, especially at this stage, especially after the Constitutional Court, there was a window, there was an opportunity for him after the court ruling to say, I apologize for, you know, oversight, not handling this thing properly, and let me do it right. And come with a statement. Politicians always have statements. You know, come with a statement and issue a public statement. Then if the public and parliament forces you out of office, then you resign. But who knows that sometimes when you apologize, you actually defeat people by not fighting back.
Do we know how size-wise that amount of dollars would be? Because I'm curious, Mustafa, okay, John Katso, now.
Yes.
Like, were they in a suitcase?
Well, if they are compact, $580,000, if they were in, I don't know if, but the U.S. does not have a $200 note. I think it's going to start with Trump.
With a $250.
I think they've got a $100 note. Let's use $100 one note times 580,000. It's a lot fresh. Even if they are compact and they are new, that's another thing. Where the dollars newly printed currency, because you know that a currency when it's not newly printed, it has been used as exchange hands. It's not like when it's compact.
No, it's compact, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Understand. When it's new, it's compact, but it's a lot. That's why they were. The other thing is, nobody has ever denied or disputed the fact that they were stuffed in sofas. For me, it's interesting. Why would money be transported in sofas or be hidden in sofas? Why?
Especially on a game farm that probably has the rifles and therefore has safes.
Yes, you understand? So it's a lot. I think it was a big look. There's a couch there, normal sofa, two to three seater sofa. You will have to remove all the sponges and cushions out of that couch, and stuff money in there. So he has created a problem for himself, the president. He has seriously created, and for those who are saying, people are playing politics and opposition, but they're playing politics. They don't understand that how dangerous and how big this thing is. It's way bigger than playing politics. It is, for me, I'm even more concerned as a citizen, and a public servant in this country, that resources of the state were used, were abused, and not only when there was theft, not only when they were hunting Emanuela in Namibia and so forth, not only then, even after, when we had South African Reserve Bank, South African Revenue Services, the Public Protector's Office, and many others to issue statements, to conduct investigations, those were abuse of state resources by the president.
Sure.
And I don't think this was handled wisely.
Mm.
And I also think they undermined the opposition and the interest of the people in this parliament. I think they thought it's one of those things that will be brushed aside. But the economic freedom fighters have been very consistent for the last 2 years since this issue. It's 2.5 years now since this matter happened. And you know, this is time when people should congratulate and give thumbs up to parties like the economic freedom fighters. They showed that what they started for, what they've been making noise, challenges in parliament, they've been consistent.
Yes.
So look at, and Julius Malema have said it several times, Fresh, that there's no permanent friends or enemies in politics.
Yes.
Look at how the EFF treated Jacob Zuma on the Nkandla issue and many other issues. And we thought because they don't like him or they hate him or Judas has a beef with Jacob Zuma, but they're continuing doing the same with Cyril Ramaphosa. And for me, that is the real truth of the opposition.
Sure.
There's no love lost. It's we are doing our job as the as an opposition. I think the EFF, ATM, from standing up legally, pursuing this matter in court, I think they've done very well for the country. Because this is for the country. If it wasn't of those two political parties, would have not went to an extent of going to the Constitutional Court. That's how important this thing is.
Yes.
For those who are saying it's a minor thing, it's his money, he didn't steal from the state. If it's a minor thing, why would it end up in a Constitutional Court where there's a ruling or a judgment with two important outcomes? One, part of that judgment has informed that one of the parliamentary processes must be changed.
So.
Or rules must be changed. It's unconstitutional.
So.
The second one is there's a prima facie evidence that the president must face the music. The same. So the Crown Court reconfirmed and supported the findings of, I forgot the name of the former justice who presided over the matter, the Section 89 matter. So this is very serious for me, and I'm not going to undermine. It's not politics. It's not playing politics. It is, and we are not even in a year of national elections, and President Ramaphosa is not going, he's not qualifying to stand for another term. So it cannot be politics. It's not qualifying to stand for another term. I think the biggest problem is if President Ramaphosa leaves the office, who will take over? The DA is not going to welcome Paul Mashatile.
Sure.
And that's where the challenge is. He is also being seen, again, let me put this in conclusion politically. President Ramaphosa is being seen as the mastermind and the glue of what you call the GNU. I think the GNU will struggle when President Ramaphosa leaves office. The GNU itself, not to say it's dependent on one person, but he is the glue that binds them together. He was seen by many in the left as a tool of white capital. He's seen by many, many white people, many white-based organizations, former political leaders, they've said he's the best person to can keep the country together.
Sure.
So he's, you understand? So he's the one who's keeping the GNU intact. And I think the fear is if he leaves office, what's going to happen? And especially now that the DA is remotely reshuffling the cabinet.
You are looking for retired Chief Justice Sandile Ngcobo.
Chief Justice Ngcobo. I mean, Fresh, why would you undermine a decision of a retired Chief Justice with an impeccable track record? And he was not alone. By the way, one of the people who sat in that committee, it was...
Masipa.
Yes. You understand? So, and I think one of the Madlanga commissioners, either Madlanga himself or the lady, was part of that whole committee and process of Section 89. So it is people with credentials in the legal, you know, field, people with solid backgrounds, people who have done very well in the legal fraternity. I mean, this is not a magistrate or a junior senior counsel who presided over Section 89 inquiry. Mm. It's a former chief justice of the country. So are we saying even the former chief justice made the wrong decision? I don't say judges are perfect and clear. They cannot make me.
Yeah, but based on the evidence presented to them, I don't think they want to thumbsuck something
exactly.
For the sake of it. It was actually Justice Ngobo, Advocate Mahlapisillo,
yes.
The retired judge Thokozile Masipa.
Yes.
Yes.
You see, an Advocate Sillo is sitting at the Matlanga Commission. And so you can see the caliber of the people who actually presided over that investigation.
Yeah, very personal.
Yeah, I personal.
There was evidence, we looked at it. There may be a case to answer.
Exactly. Mr. President Ramaphosa first says, you are my friend now. Leave this thing. Just let this thing go. It could help the ANC in rebuilding itself.
Sure.
Part of Ramaphosa's ticket in coming to office, we should never forget that, is to fight corruption and to run a clean administration. Lead by example. Demonstrate that when there's serious allegations and findings, against you, you will say, I am not going to interfere with it, but I will still exercise my judicial right, but I will not interfere with the process.
Sure.
Yep.
Let's move to the 30th of June, 2026. Do we have a vigilantism crisis, an immigration crisis, or a failure of state in acting crisis?
You know, there's a professor from University of Wits University, who wrote a piece about that during the course of this week, very well detailed. One, that piece was attacked heavily by South Africans. The first mistake of that piece was because it was written by a foreign national who's working at Wits. And obviously, when people start seeing that, oh, this person is from Ghana, and is writing this article or from West Africa, then obviously we'll write on with a biased mind. But I don't think it's vigilant and criminality will always be there in a society or the community. But I don't think this thing that is happening fresh and towards the 30th of June is vigilantism. I don't think so. I think there is failure of the rule of law. And I think the socioeconomic issues that have happened in South Africa over a long time have led us to this. And now what people are terming vigilantism is that there was a vacuum where the government failed the people on various aspects, including immigration, general immigration, not only illegal.
But also these are issues that people have been lamenting for a very long time. So sometimes I look at our leaders telling us about how we're dealing with it, and it almost feels like dealing with it because there's a looming deadline, not because there was someone who said, we are not doing our jobs.
Let's do our job. Yeah.
Because that's all it had to be. I mean, if you have inspectors that go to restaurants to make sure that when it comes to labor law, no one is found wanting. When it comes to hiring of foreign nationals, that they comply. That, you know, whether it's a rare skill or a skill that an ordinary South African won't have, that the application process happened, the Department of Home Affairs was satisfied that this person is indeed going to be an asset to the country. But because no one is checking up on any of these things, it leads to this. And now we have a situation where we're arguing over whether it's vigilantism, is it xenophobia? All it is people saying we're tired of lawlessness.
Yeah. And if the government fails to implement and or enforce the law, it leaves a vacuum to people who are frustrated by other issues to take advantage of them. There is a vacuum. The government failed to protect the interests of the people in the country. The struggles of economy and social ills. Now, what happens is the people who are unemployed, people who are not being serviced, and I think there's an element of aloofness from civil servants. I listened to them. I looked at a former MEC of housing in KZN, and Mr. I think it's Jomo Sibiya. He's now the deputy minister of employment and labor. I looked at how he's all over the streets of Ekurhuleni and Joburg, you know, buildings.
Doing inspections.
Doing inspections, labor and build a hijacked building. You know, in one building in Ekurhuleni, They found a village or a township inside a building.
Yes.
With sharks with numbers. And streets.
No, what they do is they'll hijack a building and then they'll subdivide inside the building to create a squatter camp within the building.
Yes, fresh. And a government abandoned garment. First of all, the Department of Public Works, whether it's local, provincial, or national, they've abandoned that building.
Yes.
That's one. Two, how on earth do you find 700 families constructing sharks inside the building? Nobody noticed that. Where is Metropolis? Where is South African Police Services? Where is labor and all that? And they've been living there for years. Now, what does it become? It becomes a humanitarian issue. It becomes a constitutional issue. Because once you remove them, the element of humanity comes in to say you are displacing the people, give them alternative accommodation, especially that it's a cold winter month.
Yes.
I think this thing is multi-faced. There's a social illness, there's economic problem, there's an employment for an economic situation. But there's also what we spoke about several times, me and you, the failure of noisemakers. Governments in Africa, I don't even want to talk about Europe and Asia, because there are illegal immigrants from Eastern Europe and Asia here, the Chinese, Bangladesh and Pakistanis. If you go to Bedford View, if you go to East Rand Mall and all that, the majority of the people who are living there are foreign nationals from Asia and Eastern Europe. Now, somebody says, why these marches of March and March opposition to Julia and others, are they not happening at Chinatown? Are they not happening? But it shows that people who ask such questions or politicians who ask those questions, they are not in touch with reality.
Yes.
The people who are reacting is the people who are directly impacted.
Yeah, I'm reacting about the people I'm seeing in front of me.
I'm seeing in front of you. You
know, now, for me to leave the area I'm in where I'm affected, now to go do country duty in another area.
In another area.
You're asking a bit too much of me.
Exactly. So the
people, and we can't always respond with what about.
Please.
I've told you my issue. Can we deal with my issue? If you feel there's another issue, champion that issue. Exactly. But don't ignore mine. By what abouting it.
And also questioning the people's reaction. And whose country is it? Is it not the country of the people? The people are saying, and I've said it many times, we fail to even implement. There are laws in this controversy. There are laws of who should own a business. I saw an article issued by the Department of Employment and Labor on how from now before 30th of June, they've started visiting companies, restaurants, businesses, including private homes. Now, this is why I have a problem. They are enforcing the law across the board, which is good. But the amount that was approved or that was lobbied with NEDLAC as well, because NEDLAC is part of the business decision-making process of the country. The amount, if you are found to have employed an illegal immigrant or an immigrant without papers, non-documented, whether as a gardener, domestic worker, a security guard at your gate, or as a waiter in a restaurant or anywhere, it's 1 million, the fine. Yep. Now, how do we as government arrive at a situation whereby there's a supermarket that is generating 1 million rands a day, one of the big chain supermarkets, generating 1 million a day, employing illegal immigrants or undocumented foreign nationals, and a Botswana who has at his home a foreign national who's a domestic cleaner. And then the fine is equal. How do we do that? I don't say Botswana must employ a foreign national to clean his house or to do his garden. But how do we as a nation arrive at a point as lawmakers to say we'll find them the same when there's no profit motive on my side and the other person has a profit motive? How do we arrive at such decision? How do we say we are going to start inspecting when the people you look and address them as vigilante groups have been making noise for over a year about this thing? How do you say you're starting to implement this whole thing to show that you are doing work before the 30th of June deadline when you have been lamenting that you don't have enough inspectors? Where do they suddenly come from? And what criteria are you going to use? I've written a lot of papers for government and suggestions. The biggest problem is restaurants, it's farms, it's mines. You know, that's the biggest challenge we are sitting with. Then come the trucking companies. fresh as way back as, let me tell you, as way back as when it was locked down.
But surely even households. It's just that because
yes, even households.
Households don't necessarily have a profit.
Yes, there's no profit. But majority of people who are working in our households, they're foreign nationals. Mm. I mean, that's fair and square.
Mm.
And I think I know quite a number of people who are foreign nationals in suburbs. They are paying their domestic helpers. They are not exploiting them. They are paying them decently. Because if you could afford to pay your domestic worker 4,000 to 5,000 rand, I think it's well within the legal parameters. But let me tell you something quickly. You know, as way back, I think it was 2020 during the COVID lockdown, we sat at the Reserve Bank. And one of the issues that was on my table was that truckers, South African trucks that are doing business in Africa, that are traveling to the DRC, to Malawi, to all over Africa, the drivers are foreign nationals. So South African drivers who had organized themselves as association were reacting to that, and they blockaded people. You know, one operator, truck company, they was asking a question, how many, in front of us, government officials, how many drivers do you have in Okama? He said 94. Then he was asked, how many of those 94 are foreign nationals? Fresh. At the beginning, I thought he made a mistake. He said 88.
Yeah.
Probably so. Said, is it 88 South Africans? He said, no, 88 foreign nationals. He had the reason. He explained why. One of his explanations that I could have bought, I don't say it's justified, is that for example, if you've got trucks going to the DRC Congo, you need somebody who speaks local language and French and knows the roads there and all those things. You understand? For wars and vigilantism that's happening there. It could be a reason, but it's not a justification of why you should have 88 foreign nationals out of 94 employees. Now, the government allowed all this. Fresh, I have a problem. I've been doing immigration and consular services all my adult life. Né? There is no way somebody can come and tell me that all foreign nationals who are here legally, who have papers to be lecturers at university, to work at a restaurant, it's scarce skills. What scarce skills is that? What scarce skill is even the legal ones? I have a problem to say, even those who are here legally and are compensated fairly and within the legal parameters of salaries and all that, is it scarce skills? Because that's where we're supposed to start. And many countries at the moment, if you remember how Donald Trump came into office, one of his tickets was immigration. So there's challenge of immigration all over the world because of the economies of the world are shrinking and governments are protecting nationals and jobs for the domestic people primarily. And we are not doing that. We are not showing a sign of going to that direction. We are not listening to the people. We are not acting. And political parties, obviously, they will take advantage of this as well.
Yes.
Understand? We have seen how political parties have taken advantage. Now, everybody, even leaders of the ANC, have started now talking towards the elections campaign about how foreign nationals must behave in our country, how they should come here illegally and all those things. We allowed it as a nation. And the people are saying, we are tired. We are tired. And I've said it several times that people will take advantage of soft targets. And I don't think this March and March Operation Dudelanders, I don't think their target is xenophobia or illegal immigrants. The African people who are living in South Africa will be the first victims.
Sure.
Not because South Africans hate African people, but because the proximity, they live with us in townships, villages, and all that. While the Europeans and others and the Chinese, they've grouped themselves in the suburbs where they are not. You know, when you look at puzzle shops and townships and hair salons, it's African people and to some extent Asians from Bangladesh and Pakistan. Those will be the first targets. Those will be because they are within the impoverished, unemployed communities.
Yes.
I'm explaining it. I'm not justifying it. You know, to say, why is it happening like that? And people will say it's Afrophobia or xenophobia. It is not.
So there have been voluntary repatriations. We've seen Nigerians flying back home, Ghanaians flying back home. And there's the massive issue of Malawian nationals in Durban.
Yes.
This is in Durban alone.
Yeah.
where we're having people saying voluntarily send me back home. But unfortunately, you can't be sent back home without the Department of Home Affairs processing you.
Yes.
To say that either your passport had expired or you had sneaked into the country. Mm. But everything needs to be documented, processed before you are repatriated.
Absolutely.
And often, you chances are you'll be sent to the Lindela Repatriation Center in the west of Johannesburg.
Mm-hmm.
But the Malawian nationals are saying, you're not processing us fast enough. Because I think the last I checked, they could only do 70 at a time.
Yes.
But, you know, you had numbers go from about 500 to 1,000 to 10,000.
Yes.
Now we're having people are getting agitated. I think Papa Bushiri even posted on social media that he's sending buses here.
Yeah.
At some stage, the Malawian consulate had issued a statement asking for donations for people to be repatriated. How do we deal with a situation like that where, one, you're proving march and march right by saying this is the influx we're talking about, where people come to this country and then they just disappear.
Yeah,
they just disappear, they blend in, but the laws.
You know, Fresh, it's actually shocked me that in Durban only,
yeah,
we're not even saying KwaZulu-Natal.
Yeah.
There are so many Malawians.
In Durban alone, 10,000.
And those who showed up.
Yes.
We don't talk about those who didn't show up.
Yeah, exactly.
And I also never imagined there are so many Malawians in South Africa. Zimbabweans, Mozambicans.
No, there are quite a few. In fact, in Johannesburg, you'll be amazed at how many Malawians, Zimbabweans, Lebasotho, and Mozambicans in Joburg alone.
The other three, but I never imagined Malawians. I know in the mining areas of, because a lot of Zambian Malawians came into Africa for mining purposes.
Yes.
In the years. But how do we handle this? First of all, the repatriation of foreign nationals was never supposed to be a South African problem, whether they have buses or planes or what. It's never supposed to be.
Mm.
It is the responsibility of this country and Home Affairs, so far, is doing well. You have to process the people.
Yes.
Whether they jumped the fence or crossed the river to come here, if they've now come forward to say, I want to live peacefully, there's a very important element why government is doing that.
Mm.
It is also to check if these people are not on the SAPS wanted list.
Oh, yes.
These people may have committed crime and the police have found the fingerprints. Now, if you take their fingerprints, you may end up saying, these fingerprints are on the database of the fingerprints we found on housebreaking somewhere.
Mm.
They are now coming. That's very important. But also, you don't just repatriate human beings and let them live. Some came as refugees, some came as asylum seekers. Yeah, you can't just send them out because it is not well within the United Nations, you know, human rights as well as refugee, policy. You must, when you receive them well and their permits expired, you must send them home very well. So it is important also to keep the record of the number of foreign nationals who are in South Africa. As you said, what is happening now in front of our eyes is proving that much and much has been right all along. The story that foreign nationals taking jobs, what it's undermining. Look at the strain they have put on the city of Durban only, the city of Etiquini at the moment. The strain. But these foreign countries as well, you know, when they repatriate, Ghana did the same, Nigeria did the same. I see Malawi, they start talking in nice tones, help us, support us, let's process our nationals behave. The minute they have left, either they are foreign ministers or they are presidents, they start talking nonsense in my words.
And then it becomes a South African issue.
A South African issue.
Mm.
Why should it be a South African issue? That we were nice and we were reckless to apply the law. I've listened to senior officials of governments, African governments, even the United Nations. I've heard them saying South Africa must apply its laws of human rights in dealing with these foreign nationals. They are quick to quote South African good human rights laws. They are very good to quote it. But nobody is talking about South Africa must apply the laws against illegality.
Yes.
They're not talking about that. How do I give you a right when your presence in my space on its own and primarily is illegal? It's unlawful.
The sad thing is the lawlessness of the whole thing is almost swept under the carpet, or it's not treated as seriously an issue as it actually is.
Yes.
And that unfortunately, when people are operating under the radar, when you have crimes, like you're saying, murder, housebreaking, seriously scheduled crimes happening, but you don't have people who are on the system, that's a problem.
It is.
And you can't now say to people, make it a human rights issue and not a process anyone that is lawless or illegal like you do all other people that are illegal. You can't have kids' gloves all of a sudden.
Yes.
Because it suits your narrative.
And like I said,
Where are these people when South Africans who break laws are processed?
Yes.
It's the same laws.
It's the same laws. And I said, all this organization, and I've said it before, part of the problem is corporate business, people with money, rich people, they are benefiting from this because they are paying cheap labor.
Yes.
And they've been quiet all along because they've been benefiting from this process. But the people are suffering on the ground. You know, people are talking about employment. Foreign nationals leaving is not going to immediately create employment or on a large scale. But you will have, if in absence of illegal or undocumented foreign nationals, in absence of fresh, it's going to automatically create employment opportunities for South Africans.
Yes.
But as I said, it's going to do that. Look at employment in restaurants. You want to tell me that the youth in this youth month who are sitting in townships waiting for the 370 rand of the COVID grant that has been extended, who are waiting for the 370 rand, wouldn't they rather go and work in a restaurant and earn a basic minimum salary?
Yes.
And wouldn't they do that? I mean, let's apply basic logic.
Hey, but I get it now, and then you're going to force me to have to register you and then pay you a minimum wage.
Yes.
And then
pay UIF.
And treat you decently with a bit of dignity.
So
it's not in the interest of some businesses to have people formally on their books. That's, it's because now you're eating into my profits.
You see, when you maximize profits and by breaking the law,
yes,
we must deal with that as a country.
Absolutely.
These businesses that are breaking the law. But also, if we can't create employment, if we can't create employment for youth, let's create opportunities of SMMEs. Let's create opportunities of them being able to feed themselves. You know, look. When we grew up, we used to perm and make wave and styling gels and what do you call that one that you have now with short hair, S-curl and all that. Who used to do that on our heads? Who braids women hair? It used to be other people in the community. And it was a source of income or source of living. Now, when you have everybody coming from everywhere doing that, you are closing up opportunities for the local people first.
Yes.
And that's why I'm a very strong advocate of protected sectors. I don't say foreign nationals must not come and live with the immigration is all over the world. I'm saying we as a country, we must have protected sectors of the economy that we are saying these sectors are exclusively for citizens of South Africa or permanent residents of South. They're exclusive. All other countries do that. Exclusive businesses are for residents or for citizens. If we don't start there, we won't see the opportunity.
Yes.
And if that insults other countries who have failed to create those opportunities for their citizens, let them be insulted. Let them be insulted. It's so embarrassing to hear a prime minister, or a foreign minister, or a president of another country saying to another country, yeah, but you are starving our people. When your people ran away from starvation?
You know, it's unfortunate that for a lot of these governments, obviously, if my people are leaving because I have failed to provide services, or just an opportunity for them to exist within my country, and they go to another country, and they exist there illegally, and they're sending money home every week or every month. Obviously, that works in the favor of my economy. But I'm yet to hear any of them actually say, we're sorry. That our failure of our people has burdened your people.
Yes.
But let's find a way that can mutually benefit both countries. But we are sorry. that we have not created an opportunity for our people to feel like they can stay home and eke out an existence.
Exactly.
You know, for me, the day you have responsible leadership, accountable leadership like that, is the day you'll know that maybe Africa will be okay.
Yes.
Until then, nobody wants to take responsibility.
And you look, even South Africa,
if my child breaks into your house
to steal, to
because
eat.
We didn't have food,
yes.
or for whatever reason, or I didn't create an environment for them to feel like they don't need to break into someone else's house, my responsibility is to go to that neighbor and say, I am sorry.
Yeah.
Is there a bill I can help you cover?
Exactly.
Because my child has done that. At just basic human decency level. Why is that lacking?
And it's lacking because there's no ethical leadership in the continent. Even us, there's no ethical leadership. When you look at what is an asylum seeker, a refugee, it's normally you are running away from persecution, wars, and all those things. Is there that in
there's
Nigeria?
There's a guy from Ghana who's running away from being a chief.
Nigeria, Malawi. Is there wars going on in those countries? It's starvation, it's poverty, it's not wars.
Yes.
Is there a war going on in Pakistan and Bangladesh that the people run from there to come here? There's nothing like that. It is economic opportunities, and our laws were soft and they were not enforced. I mean, in conclusion, first look at, you know, I want to use this as an example. When President Mbeki and Menko Sena Dlamini-Zuma and others are saying it is not as bad as we are portraying.
No, it's very, very bad.
It's very bad.
Unfortunately, they don't live on the ground. They don't live in the inner cities.
It's bad.
They don't live in the...
In the townships where there's one clinic.
They don't live in some of the informal settlements. There's an informal settlement near off Malibongwe, on your way to Cosmo City.
Yes.
That entire informal settlements is just people from one country.
Yeah.
Just people from one country.
Yeah. Now, the government goes and erects a clinic there, supply water, sanitation and everything. Fine, square. That clinic was meant to serve, let's say, 100,000 people. Now you are sitting with 700,000 people. They queue at clinics. It impacts on people's life every day. It does. They queue at clinics. They are running out of medicines. I mean, how many times did the Border Management Authority and the police caught foreign nationals from Malawi and Zimbabwe specifically, driving out of South Africa with government-issued drugs? Drugs meaning medicines. In this, how many times did it happen that people go and collect medicines of, say, diabetes or high blood pressure or what, and they package them to export them to their countries and they open shops there to sell those things? We that's lawlessness that we shouldn't allow as a country. But also, first, you shouldn't be ashamed to apply the law fair and equally.
Yeah.
Never be ashamed to do that.
Absolutely. Do we move on?
Yes, sir. Let's move.
I have a headache already. The DA forces President Ramaphosa to consider cabinet changes. New DA leader Hill Lewis, elected in April post-Steenhuisen, wrote to President Ramaphosa demoting John Steenhuisen from agriculture to Deputy Minister of Trade with the foot and mouth disease crisis as the stated reason. Willie Orkamp moves up to agriculture, Mania to environment, Kasim and Bloom in as deputies, and Gondwe axed. What's going on?
The first wait, I would say this first, and I'll tell you why. You know, when the DA, you remember a week after this gentleman was elected to be the leader of the DA.
Yes.
Remember before that, weeks before, towards that build up to that elective conference, there were skirmishes between Steenhuisen and the former DA, what do you call that guy, who was a doctor, somebody who was fired by Steenhuisen, who was a treasurer general of the DA.
Yes.
I said, watch in 2 to 3 months how the DA is going to reshuffle their people in cabinet. And Steenhuisen may lose his position. I even suggested that type that he will totally be removed from cabinet.
You called it.
Yes, and probably Ramaphosa may compensate him by making him an ambassador. The DA has a scorecard, and this is where the problem is. The DA has a scorecard, or they claim they have a scorecard of the performance of those they've deployed to government, particularly to cabinet. And due to the foot and mouth disease, which is a very complex situation, they are saying the performance of Steenhuisen is it's not up to scratch. It didn't meet the requirements. and bring in Willy Ogamp. But you know what does it say to me? It says to me, part of the argument of the GNU, it was not only proportional representation in the cabinet. When I look at it, when I read the letter that they've sent to President Ramaphosa, and what they, it's more like an instruction, move this one there, move that one there, demote this one. What happened to the constitutional position of this country that the president is the president prerogative? So we are now actually being governed in the executive authority by an, I call it illegal, unofficial GNU agreement that is not legislated, because nothing is legislating the GNU agreement. There's nothing. Mm. I call it a document that is flying on air. Now we are being governed as the executive authority, not by the constitution that gives the president absolute rights, by the agreement. What does the agreement say? The agreement is clear to us that it says these portfolios, they belong to us. You understand? Mm. As the DA, as PAC, I think it's these portfolios. It's not to say what we thought at the beginning. At the beginning, we thought there's proportional representation. The DA is a second party to get more, like 8 ministers. Mm. The PAC and others get 1, 1, 1. I don't think that's the issue. I think the DA has successfully claimed strategic executive positions.
Yes.
And when you look at them, at this new list, the revised list, the DA is asserting itself on economic, you know, trade and industry, agriculture, where they control.
You know, I also suspect that they lobbied for departments where they can measure the difference they made.
Yeah,
and in fact, Hill Lewis calls it the DA difference.
Yes,
and
yes.
And I think it's in these departments where they'll be able to say this is the data, pre and post.
Absolutely, they've outplayed the ANC and others in that instance.
Mm.
And look at and they are you mentioned correct when you say it's measurable.
Mm.
Look at Public Works, look at Home Affairs, the biggest number one problem department.
Mm.
Home Affairs, you look at agriculture, very important for the economy of the country. And they said, we can measure ourselves here.
But why was Steenhuisen so bullish and arrogant about wanting to centralize vaccines for foot and mouth? When the farmers, the experts in farming, were saying,
give it to us.
Allow for us to be able to vaccinate our own herds.
Yes.
It's not asking for too much. Other nations that deal with foot and mouth have done that
before. They've done that. Give it to the farmers. I don't know, Raj, what could it be? It's money. It's money. It's making sure that the people who get this business are your friends. Or comrades or what?
But who's advising you that you're ignoring the people who are having to deal with the crisis at grassroots levels?
You know, I was thinking about it during the course of this week. Who's advising?
Mm.
Cabinet ministers are allowed, I think, 5 advisors.
Mm.
Normally, who they will take? Comrades or friends?
Mm.
The yes pass.
The people they trust.
The people they trust. Mm. And I said, it is very seldom that you will get somebody who comes from outside to come and advise you, because that person is going to either expose you or not draw the line. And I think that's where politicians make a mistake.
You need someone who's not afraid to tell you.
You know, for example, I was thinking about it during the week to say, if government was serious about these immigration issues and consular and movement and work permits and what, they would have went and hunted ex-diplomats who are specialists in that, Bo Buktsang, ambassador who, consul general, people who worked with that for years, and say, we are forming this committee. They formed the committee. But who is in that committee of the JCPS cluster? It is the same people who are in government. It is the same ministers and deputy ministers and officials who have no clue of how this thing works. They don't know the head and the tail of these things. When they've got experts lying all over the country who could advise them on how other countries do this, how we should handle this. We are not the first country to experience immigration crisis. The USA has happened, Germany has happened to it. Many other countries have experienced it. But Steenhuisen and the DA, I think it also more of the internal, well-managed fighting in the DA. You remember the other day you spoke about how they are good in managing their cliques or their differences within the party. They manage it very well. And I think it's part of that. It's shaking up in the DA to go and put people that they think are more closer and stronger towards the new leader, unlike from other camps of the DA. But I don't think that, I think the biggest loser here, there's one lady who they've moved out, completely out. She was a deputy minister. But the demotion of Steenhuisen, look, Steenhuisen ate very quickly and he rose up. You know, him being elected into cabinet, in it's 2 years now, in July, it will be 2 years there in cabinet. I think he benefited.
No, but what about Lema Ramanyana? Lema Ramanyana, when I wrote Ujilayana something. So Lema Ramanyana.
Who doesn't have Maramanyana? They look at Gaitin, look at Steenhuisen, they all have Maramanyana. So I don't think it's personal. I think it's political. It's a political move that the DA is doing. Mm. I know President Ramaphosa met with the top seven.
Yes,
this week.
He had an urgent meeting.
Yeah.
Because what the DA are doing is going to force him to also reshuffle on his side.
Because, not necessarily.
No, Sisi must still be replaced.
Oh, replaced, yes.
Remember,
yes.
And obviously, yes. Apparently the ANC Women's League are pushing for Dinapule, who's not exactly covered in glory herself.
Oh, God, no, please. The Women's League, please, man. Please, let's stop recycling. Let the ANC do some nice thing. There's nothing wrong with Medina Pule.
And you know, there are so many bright,
young
competent women, yes, in the Women's League.
Yes.
But it almost seems like... So, Emang.
Fresh, you can't eat for 32 years. Let ANC, here's a special advice from me. Freeze.
Yes.
In revamping and rebuilding and regenerating yourself, the opportunity is now.
Yes.
It's now, before local elections and before 2029 elections. Mm. The opportunity is now. The ANC, it's a dead horse. It's dying. They should resuscitate it now. Or what do you do when you have fainted and they... what do you call that?
Resuscitate.
Yeah. There's a medical term. It's now that they should take the advantage and the opportunity to keep on bringing us people that we know they are failures.
But also, I mean, with respect, Dinapule is not exactly covered in glory.
Yes.
I mean, for JZ to have decided that House Pani more, that in itself is problematic.
Do people forgot? Have people forgotten the red sole shoes? Have people forgotten the failures?
The Benten.
Yeah. Mm. Have we forgotten all those things? Mm. But they bring fresh new blood.
Sure.
Understand?
I personally know people who are in their 30s and 40s, well-educated, ready to serve. But they must wait.
They must wait. Wait for when you are not going to win elections ever again. Mm. But it is also for the best interest of not only the part of the country to deploy competent people in positions. And I think President Ramaphosa was forced by the DA to go and consult with the top seven or top six, if including him to be seven of the ANC. He had to. I didn't see it as affecting because, as I said at the beginning of our conversation on this topic, I don't think it's affecting the portfolios occupied by the ANC per se, because it looks like the DA chose their portfolios or departments they want to lead. They're comfortable there, so you will reshuffle within our departments. You know, like I said at the beginning, the constitutional powers vested into President Ramaphosa have been taken away by the GNU illegal agreement. Mm. That's why a political party can tell the president when to reshuffle the cabinet and how. Not only when and how. Mm. Where is the president's prerogative?
Hey, because you're not entitled.
You're not entitled.
You're not entitled to say to the president, okay, shuffle anyan.
Yeah.
He must decide if it's time to shuffle.
Exactly. Exactly. What if President Ramaphosa says to the DA leader, no, I'm not in a ready to can reshuffle cabinet.
Or I like Steenhuisen there.
I think he's doing a good job. What if President Ramaphosa says that it is going to collapse the GNU? The DA will make noise. They will scrub their backs to say, you are going to do this.
Yeah.
And again, and if people understand how the constitution works, this is me saying it, The GNU illegal agreement has suspended the powers of the constitutional powers of the president. That's why we are in the country. And for me, it's the DA that is always talking a lot about the rule of law and the constitution. They are actually abusing and disregarding the constitution for the sake of being in government. If you want to stand up and say it's by the rule of law, it's by the constitution, why do you want to bend and twist the constitution when it suits you? What happened to the powers of the constitution? Because it is taking, but I want somebody to challenge me that the GNU agreement is actually, it's unconstitutional. It's an agreement that is not regulated by any law in this country. There's no law that's regulating it. If I was in the opposition, I would have taken the GNU to the Constitutional Court to say it's an illegitimate. The Constitution provided two: majority, you rule, you form cabinet, or you form a minority government. Not what we are having at the moment. But that's a topic for another day.
Indeed it is. Can we go to the Middle East quickly?
Yes, sir.
US-Iran peace deal announced Sunday, 14 June, via Pakistani Prime Minister Sharif as mediator. Formal signing yesterday in Switzerland. It ends the roughly four-month 2026 war, reopens the Straits of Hormuz, lifts oil sanctions, and defers Iran's nuclear program to phase two talks. Trump has authorized lifting the naval blockade. And it seems like Israel may be the loser on this one.
If they are really the loser, fresh. Yes. I having have studied politics and history all my life, not at school, in real life, I don't trust Americans on anything that's called a peace deal. I don't trust them at all. One, two, if I look at that peace agreement, Iran is victorious. If that peace agreement, well, they are victorious.
And they get billions of dollars to rebuild.
Yeah. I heard the Vice President Vance saying, no, we are not giving them any cash. I don't care whether you give me cash. If you rebuild that bridge, that's what I want. I don't want cash. Almost all the demands of the Iranians have been met in that agreement. That's why I doubt if it will hold water. Because then Trump is supposed to go and win the hearts of those who have been ill advising him to say, hey, let's sign this thing. Or let's agree on ceasefire and let's give Iran what they want. The only thing that the Americans can make noise and shine and boast about is that Iran, as they have done before, said, come and inspect through the UN, not you, the US, through the UN. Come and inspect. Come and monitor our nuclear capabilities. We don't have any interest of developing a nuclear weapons. They've just added one sentence strategically there. To say they should also not acquire it by buying it nuclear. So it's not only developing it internally. So let's say, for example, they go to North Korea or China or Russia and say, sell me nuclear warheads. They can't do that as well. That's the only thing they've added. But this type of agreement has been there with Iran since the 80s. You understand? Since the 80s, there's nothing new. They just went there to support Israel. And the other big deal is Iran has stand very firm to say no deal will be entered into or agreed to if our neighbors in Hezbollah and other neighboring countries...
Yeah, if Lebanon are not left in left alone.
Left alone, yeah.
Peacefully. Yes. Then there can't be a deal.
Yeah. The biggest one, which is a threat for Israel, go and look at a map of the reduced number of U.S. military bases in the neighboring countries in the Gulf. In the last 4 months, they've been reduced to less than half. They've left. So Israel is being left naked at the moment where we are. And for America to grow balls and stand up and say, we will go ahead and enter into this agreement facilitated by Pakistan and other countries without Israel that's not wanting to listen to us, I doubt if that is true. I doubt if America will go ahead without Netanyahu and the Israeli government. I don't know what risk are they taking. But I don't want to be a prophet of doom. I don't think this peace deal will last long. And I think Iran knows how America turns around. Whoever president, all their presidents have been like that. They agree on something. What did they do in Iraq?
Mm.
What did they do in Libya? What did they do in Somalia?
Mm.
Understand? They agree on something. They go and destroy a country like, oh, we were ill-advised, we were wrong. We bombed a country thinking there's new weapons of mass destruction.
But every agency that matters told the Trump administration that Iran are not close to having a nuclear weapon. Every single one of them was ignored.
It's business, Fresh. Talking about Trump and his cowards there, they are business people. I've said it for many years. The war, it's business. You destroy a country, who is going to supply cement? Who's going to supply this and that? Who's going to rebuild whatever has been destroyed in Iran? It is business people.
Mm.
So this war, it was about business. But I'm giving them a month. I want to see in a month no drone, no bullet, no missile has been fired. And the Strait of Hormuz, you know, when I talk about Strait of Hormuz, something makes me very angry. Imagine I'm diverting, being on a date and somebody asks you, what is the Strait of Hormuz? Then you realize that you are in wrong dates. So we must just guard against our governments. When the oil prices go down, the nation must start making demands that the price of fuel should go down.
Yes.
Because the cause of abnormal fuel price surge, it was because of this war.
Mm.
I want to see our government, I don't care about other governments, what they are going to do.
Mm.
Once the oil price starts going down, are they going to drop the price of petrol with the amounts they've increased with? Because it's supposed to be like that if you care for the people.
Absolutely.
But whoever trusts Donald Trump and the Americans, not me.
Mm.
I don't think it's a genuine, especially that Israel is not part of this.
But we can agree, though, that as things stand, that Iran won.
Iran stood firm, Iran won, Iran showed resilience that I've never seen in my life.
But I think also they were underestimated, is often the problem with wars such as this one, where you go against all intelligence, you go against every bit of sane advice that you're given, because you have your own ends. That you're after.
But again, it says to me, I don't know what was the American military position. I know their intelligence and other agencies have said, let's not do it.
No, remember there's generals who were forced to resign.
To resign, yeah.
Because I'm certain they also stood firm in saying what we're doing is wrong.
Remember the biggest plan of America? It was not about nuclear, the biggest, the number one target of the USA going into Iran war, it was the regime change. It was to change the government. They underestimated the Iranians on the ground, the people of Iran, to say, we may not be happy. They thought those they funded and influenced to cause havoc, they are bigger and stronger. They underestimated the Iranians to say, we may not be happy with our government, but we will decide to do it our way at our own time to change the government.
Absolutely.
Not imposed on us by a foreign state. And I think the Americans didn't read, or they don't know the art of war. Because should they have known the art of war, is that you do your intelligence on the ground, you check the mindset of the people. Now you are fighting people who are prepared to die.
Yes.
Or how do you go and fight a person who's prepared to die in order to change their government? But thumbs up to the Iranians. Thumbs up to the, you know, they've got this gentleman. He's a professor at the university, but he's the negotiating leader. You know, they took an expert in international relations who's a professor. He's a leader, a lead negotiator for Iran. Very consistent, very, very solid with their position. They don't bend, they don't shake, they don't go there and say, we're still going to consult with our leader back at home. They didn't waste time. They go there with a position, this or nothing. So Iran is victorious in this war. Americans may not like it, but they were beaten flat, economically and militarily. They were beaten by the Iranians, even when you go diplomatically. And thanks to a country like Pakistan. Can the Prime Minister of Pakistan come and negotiate for his nationals in South Africa to go back home? Look, he's a chief negotiator. He achieved what the UN could not achieve.
Absolutely.
So thumbs up to Pakistan and the Prime Minister. They've done very well.
We're running out of time.
Let's go.
But we can't go without talking the legacy of June 16.
Oh, yes.
It's the Golden Jubilee, 50 years since Soweto school children marched against Afrikaans as a medium of instruction under Bantu education, amongst other things. Because I think we often reduce this to Afrikaans in classrooms. But almost to take away from the young people that there were bigger issues that they were also marching against, including group areas.
Thank you. You know, this week I still have my notes and records.
Yes.
And speeches, I even saw on Twitter, they now have it. I don't know where people get info. Your social media. Of the number one accused in the Bethel trial, the man who was accused, who was the mastermind of the June 16 rebellion, it was Zephaniah Lekwame Mothopeng, the leader of the PAC.
Yes.
And I saw a video where he was talking about this to say, by the way, others must stop claiming this thing. That's why they don't know. They think it was against Afrikaans and Bantu education. There was more
to
this.
It was bigger than that.
It was explained that those who are saying it was against Bantu education, it's because they were not there. They don't know. The June 16, 1976, and maybe this must be taught at schools, was led by the Black Consciousness and the Pan-Africanist Congress. It was only them. The ANC or the Chartists, they were nowhere near that rebellion. And that's why they are lacking the understanding. That's why for 32 years, June 16 celebrations are 50 years old now. And the same problems and challenges of displacement, the facilities, the quality of education, not only Afrikaans, it is still the same today.
I was going
to
say,
to some extent.
Many would argue that you would think that after 50 years, the youth of the country would not be dealing with pretty much almost the same things
that Mashininians dealt with.
That kids 50 years ago died for.
Yes, and it's still the same. I mean, we have to tell the truth. Yes, there's more schools being built because the country is growing, the population is growing, but the quality of education, that's why people in townships who can afford, they take their kids to former Model C and white schools in cities.
And let's argue that it was about Afrikaans.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go with that narrative that it was about Afrikaans. It's 50 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Your average child in a village
mm-hmm.
and in some townships is still learning in a language they don't fully understand.
Exactly. They first must learn the language, and then English must be your first language.
Ke bua Sevenda, ke Motswana, ke Mozulu. You're teaching me in English?
Yeah.
Has anything changed then?
Nothing.
If English is not my mother tongue?
That's why I don't want to go with the narrative of it was yes, there was a battle of want to teach us as Afrikaans as the primary language.
But there were bigger issues.
There were bigger issues. Mm-hmm. And
there were other issues.
And first, you know what we could have done as a nation, at least for the 1976 kids, is to fare better in Afrikaans, you know, improve the life of the youth in this country. Our youth has the highest unemployment rate in the entire universe. Youth, and don't talk about the Botswans who are unemployed. I want to talk about the youth. And we should have done things better. We could have made our schools safe havens. To this day, Fresh, to this day, there are still kids in the Republic of South Africa who do not have decent classrooms. There are still schools in the Eastern Cape, in Limpopo, where kids are learning in shacks or under the tree. And we cannot lie about these things and say they do not exist. There are schools where kids are studying and Brafred somewhere got a tender to build a school, and when it's windy or cold or storms are coming, the roof get blown off. So we did not give the decency that the people that died and fought for. And I think quite a number of people, there's a book that has just been published about the life of T.A.T. Mashinini, you know, one of the leaders of the 1976 uprising. But also we should not turn the 1976 as the period or the phase where the apartheid government, pardon me, they shot and killed unarmed youth. Because that's what people are saying. They want to do it as if there was a massacre of youth students, actually not even youth, students protesting against Afrikaans. And that's not true. That's a lie. And I think we should start as a nation, because the schools are refusing to tell the truth, start distributing information to students and to youth about what actually happened. You know, I always say, when we started this podcast 3 years back, I used to say people don't know that the 1976 uprising did not even start in Soweto. It started in Kagiso, in Mogale City today. They did not know that a meeting took place as way back as 1974 between Biko and Sobukwe when they were planning this whole thing, who were the leaders of the Black Conscious Movement and the PAC. They planned this, and why is Efaniamu Tupin? Because he was a school principal in Orlando. Understand? He was best positioned to rally these boys and girls at school to say, I'm a principal, I'm working, I'm in government. You are right with what you are demanding. Start an uprising, I'll support you as a school principal. It was well coordinated. Now, there were no social media, there were no cell phones. People were monitored in 1976. But look at how the organizing, that this ring mushroomed in Kagiso, then Soweto, then in Langa, then in Sharpeville and other areas. It shows the capabilities of the political leaders at that time and the students, yes, how organized they were to can do that. And now we are sitting here crying to march and on march and Operation Dudula and people who have organized themselves in civic and civil organizations. It demonstrates the power of a well-organized civic movement.
I mean, look at August 4 stairways?
Yes.
In fact, the stairways in August.
Yes.
Where there's no social media, you can't talk about it on radio,
yes,
you can't broadcast it.
You can't wear t-shirts of parties.
But when people said we are staying away, yes, or that we are not supporting a non-black business,
yes,
it happened.
The consumer boycott.
It happened.
Yes, yes. And the current government is underestimating the capabilities of civilians in this country who are not political activists. They are undermining that, and I see it coming. It's just going to be bad these days because the social media, there's arms all over the streets. It's no longer about black and white. It's no longer about Swartgevaar or the apartheid police watching. You know, I was saying to people, we should also not underestimate fresh the role that black people or Africans in South Africa, the role that we played or some played in perpetuating apartheid and its policies. Because without the sellouts and the contribution of some black people who were in the police force or in the military, without their contribution and cooperating and collaborating with the apartheid government would have not prolonged apartheid for so long. But because they had people in the townships living with us, in the villages, they created homeland states and they controlled the leaders of those homeland states. But you know, it's sad, Fresh, that instead of celebrating the achievements that the class of 76 died for, we are still sitting with some of those challenges. You know, we are still sitting with inferior quality education. We are still sitting with... One of the great achievements is that we have a constitution that says every child must be at school, whether you can afford or not. That's a good achievement. That's great. But it's the quality of the education. It's also the history of the education that we are being taught at school. Is it producing what we want and lack as a nation? That's one question that I don't know why the nation is afraid to talk about. What do we need? We need artisans. What did we do? We shut down the artisanal schools. And is the quality of education that we are getting or our children are getting in the public schools in South Africa, putting them in a position to can compete with their former privileged whites and international communities? A lot of our students, when they go and compete abroad, whether in maths or what, they achieve a lot. We get a lot of trophies. But it's one in a million. And maybe it's because that child is brilliant, not because our education has prepared that person. There's a difference between the naturally born brilliant kids who used to get A's and B's at school and the Botswans who had to work very hard to get one C, you understand? So we have to revisit the whole education system. But if we don't provide an enabling environment and infrastructure,
yes,
you know, sometimes it's the infrastructure where you study. It makes you think proper. People who studied economics, they will tell you to get into an office with proper lighting. The light is not reflecting on your computer screen. It creates an enabling environment for you to work. But we don't have political leaders in education who think along those lines. You know, taking away extramural activities at school, And as I'm taking away those things, that there were school choirs competition, there were schools playing and competing in football, and all those things that kept the kids, the youth, and the student away from problems. One of the things, in conclusion from my side, one of the things that the 1976 youth fought for, people are forgetting, was alcohol, shebeens in townships, because they were destroying their fathers and brothers and mothers' lives.
Yes.
If you remember that youth, they went to shebeens to kick buckets of mkomboti and tamela, cartoons, whatever it's called. That was one of the things they fought to say, our fathers and mothers are being delayed by the apartheid government allowing alcohol on every street. There was a shebeen cookhouse.
Yes.
And the youth of 70s...
To pacify the masses.
To pacify the masses. So, youth stood up and said, but the uncle is every day. Who do we see that? So we are fighting, we are being killed by the police, we are being fed poison.
And to a certain extent, not much has changed about that.
Not much has changed.
And a lot of people lament how, if you go to the suburbs, you won't find an alcohol billboard near a school.
Yes.
But you go to the township and it's there.
Yes.
Why is that allowed?
Or what happens on June 16th? It's parties.
Sure.
It's just like nyamas. Dancing. Can
you have the gym dress, the uniform, or the blazer, the groove?
Yeah, how can
you the youth and Dala, can you school uniform, or can the gym dress? It doesn't fit anymore, but can the gym dress?
Yeah, ulo onwa.
Yeah,
and that is the mind. The problem with apartheid and colonialism is the mind of an African person. If we do not decolonize our minds and our education, we will not achieve the freedom we are talking about. And I said, it is not supposed to be where we are. We are not supposed to be, but there's hope. There's hope. Me, when I see civic organization organizing themselves, there's march on march and what they've organized themselves very well. And trust me, one day we'll talk about this. This whole thing, it's well orchestrated. People want to downplay it. The fact that all these marches have happened peacefully all over the country, in almost 4 or 5 provinces, Mpumalanga, Gauteng, Northwest, Eastern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal, the fact that these protests, these marches were peaceful and were well organized, I do not care who's the third force, who's funding, because there is somebody funding these processes, definitely. Yes. I just hope and wish our intelligence is aware. The question becomes, what is the purpose of the funder, the third party?
Yes.
What is the intended objective? What do they want to achieve? Botsang's opinion, it is to actually disempower the government. I think somebody has seen a loophole to say the government has become powerless. Political parties are betraying the people. Let's give power back to the people indirectly. And the government was sleeping. They didn't see this coming. There's a vacuum, there's a loophole, and there's a simmering. It's like when you want to create a military camp, when you want to arm the people, it's very easy.
Zwelinzi Mavhavhi was on Talk Radio 702 on Thursday morning, speaking to Bongani Bingwa.
Okay.
And he said he would not be surprised if the MKP might be behind the scenes, be the ones who are poking and saying to march and march, march and march, let's go, let's go, let's go.
Well, Mr. Vavi, I don't think it's behind the scenes, because we have seen both MKP and even Action SA marching with them, having meetings with them, engaging them. My question becomes to Mr. Vavi and others who are calling them vigilantes, who are against it. What is wrong when political parties align themselves with organized groups? There's nothing wrong with that. Yes. As long as it's not lawlessness. As long as it's not illegal. Zwelinzi Mavhavhi himself, as the longest serving Secretary General of COSATU, which was the Labour Federation of VRS, when he was there, if you recall Polokwane 2007, it was him from COSATU, Blade Nzimande from SACP, Julius Malema from the Youth League, that rallied behind the removal of President Mbeki and the victory of President Zuma. They were aligned to the ANC. As civic organization. We had SANCO, which was supposed to have been an organization of civic or civil organizations that's aligned to the ANC. So political parties will take advantage naturally of a situation, and then when the government is failing the people, they will say to the people, you are right. We are in government. We know you are right. That's why we formed MK. That's why we formed Action SA or other political parties. You are right with what you are doing. Look at how the EFF has amassed, used the Marikana event. People will think the EFF actually is the only organization that fought for the Marikana settlement. They have been consistent with AMCU, the federation, the workers' federation. The EFF, people will think Marikana, actually the people who were shot there were EFF members. But they became very smart about the Marikana. Every year they commemorate Marikana. And when Marikana happened, the EFF was not yet born. If you recall, the EFF was born in 2013. Marikana happened in 2012. But look at how they've organized themselves towards the Marikana massacre. And political parties will do that. But I don't think the MKP are doing it behind the scenes. I think they're doing it openly. I've seen Jacinta and Gomez Zuma wearing MKP Kalia at some stage. Actually, people were saying, oh, you said you are apolitical, but now you are wearing MKP. It's a right of association. The lady from Operation Dudula Z has joined Action SA after he resigned from Operation Dudula. People have a right of affiliation and association, but we should not look at who is doing what. We should look at, are they laments?
Yes.
Are they a cause?
Are they lying?
Are they lying? Are they justified? They are not lying. Now, you can't tell me that that's not how you do it. I listened to Minister Mamoru Kukubai addressing the nation after that meeting to say, this is not how you do things. Let government do things according to the law. That government has failed to do things according to the law.
Yes.
They failed the people. The people are taking this whole thing into their own hands now to force the government.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, 50 years of June 16, may the souls of those gallant fighters, some of them, some families have even recovered the mortal remains of their own children. You know, some they disappeared in other African states where they were exiled. We never know what happened. The apartheid government went into many African countries to kill people there or kidnap people there. But yeah, and look, they've set the tone, and I think the current youth and the current students, instead of drinking and partying in the month of June, they should actually do activities that will build and make the life of youth better. And it's not only jobs, fresh. It's not, there's opportunities that this country can create for our youth to be able to feed themselves. Instead of giving them 270, create opportunities for them. And, yes. And I think with that as a nation, we can achieve a lot.
Absolutely. Yes. We're out of time.
Thank you, Fresh.
Where do we find you on social media?
BotsangM@gmail.com. And that's the email, and at BotsangM on social media handles. And we can continue this conversation on WhatsApp at +27838487787.
Great stuff. Thank you, as always, sir.
Thank you, Fresh. I miss you on the radio.
We'll see you in a week. Yo, I'll be on the radio from the 1st of July on Kaya FM 959. So let's meet there, 959.co.za, if you are not in the province of Gauteng in South Africa. Can't wait.
Thanks, Fresh.
Yes, sir. Thank you for hanging out with us on Wow What A Week, #Politrix, Fresh, Bozang, and you. We are coming to you from Discover TV in Four Ways, Johannesburg. Discover TV, let them be your stage. We are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email us on waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. From our executive producer, Kelezo Modisa King, our videographers at Pezulu Works, Trevor and his crew, and the entire crew, thank you for choosing us every single Saturday morning at 8. And for those of you that come a bit later to watch, we appreciate you. Please continue to interact with the conversation in the comment section at the bottom. Please like, please subscribe, and share the links so that we can keep conversating and hopefully finding each other eventually. Until next week, we are out of here. Have a great week, in spite of yourselves.